Live from the College of Communication, Arts and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going
to
get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shot fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? Happy Tuesday to you all. It is April 16th, 2019. And thank you so much for allowing Current Sports to be a part of your weekday. I'm excited about today's Current Sports. You know, yesterday was such a fun show on Monday. You know, we pretty much throughout the entire hour, we touched on the Michigan State spring game and also the jersey reveal, right? The new alternative jerseys that are getting that topic is getting so much conversation. You heard my thoughts on it. I think this conversation is just totally blown out of proportion. They're jerseys. They'll wear them once. People are acting like it's the end of the world right now. You heard, and much to my surprise, I'm certainly in the minority in saying that. Many people flipping out about them. And much to my surprise, Connor agreed with me. Connor Mathis, engineer of the Monday, Wednesday, and occasionally Friday edition of Current Sports. We got a lot of reaction from you guys on that topic. That was fun. And also, talking about the greatest comeback in sports history. Tiger Woods winning the Masters on Sunday. What a moment it was. And, you know, we put into context throughout this hour on yesterday's show what that moment meant to sports and what it means for the world of golf moving forward. And, you know, you heard my thoughts on it. You know, if you missed it, simply go to WKAR.org to check it out. It was our Current Sports segment of the day. You can check out that segment or listen to any episode in the history of Current Sports by going to WKAR.org. And today, I want to get the perspective of Tiger Woods' Masters tournament victory by chatting with the head coach of the Michigan State men's golf team, Casey Lubon, one of my favorite guys to interview, one of my favorite coaches at Michigan State University. Casey actually, you know, it came to fruition because I remember we had him on the show last year. I believe it was last summer we had Casey on, and we touched on the topic of Tiger Woods and whether or not he could get back to full form and whether or not he'd win another Masters. And Casey, you know, he kind of took a pause and said, look, I think he's going to come back. Looking at how there's been a steady progression over the last few years, I can see Tiger winning another major. And, you know, he was dead serious about it. You know, I remember we had that conversation, and, you know, he's one of the guys I thought about when watching those final few holes in Augusta on Sunday. Thrilling. And I don't know if you guys have seen the ratings, and this is just the Tiger effect. This is the Tiger effect, folks. The ratings came out yesterday and noted that 21% of all televisions that were on in America were tuned into the final round of the Masters on Sunday. Only Tiger Woods has that kind of draw. He is the only athlete that can pull that off. Quite amazing. Quite amazing. So we'll get the perspective of Casey Lubon on Tiger Woods' Masters tournament victory later on this hour. We'll dive more into the specifics of the spring game today. You'll get a chance to hear from head coach Mark D'Antonio. You'll also get a chance to hear what one of his players had to say about the jerseys. You don't want to miss that. But I'll dive into the numbers. Again, it's a spring game. So I'm not going to be that guy that sits here on the air and says, well, look at how Brian played. You know, Lewerke was great in the pocket. He, you know, zip on the football and accuracy. Look at the defense. They look great. You cannot make hard conclusions based on a spring game. All right? I'll tell you what I saw. I'll touch on what I think it could mean for next year's team, but I'm not going to give you bold, bad predictions on how the Spartans will look in the 2019 season, all right? But, and again, you'll hear the perspective of head coach Mark D'Antonio. You don't want to miss that. Also, got to touch on the NBA playoffs. I'm sitting there watching that Detroit Pistons game one Sunday, and I'm just like, you know, I'm conflicted because one part of me is like, well, we made the playoffs, but the other part of me is like, well, you're getting blown out by 40 points to the Milwaukee Bucks. What do you gain in this series? And then you add on the fact that Blake Griffin is not going to play against Milwaukee this entire series. So what do the Pistons gain, if anything, when discussing the NBA playoffs? I'll touch on that and also some pretty entertaining stuff last night. That's why I feel like I'm lagging a bit on today's current sport, because I was up until about like 3:30 in the morning. I watched the L.A. Clippers and the Golden State Warriors game in its entirety, and then I watched the incredible, it's the most entertaining sports show on television, Inside the NBA with Charles Barkley, Kenny the Jet Smith, Ernie Johnson, Shaquille O'Neal. They had a ball last night, as they usually do, and breaking down all of the happenings. It was the biggest comeback in NBA history. All right, I'll give you the specifics of that comeback victory for the L.A. Clippers over the Warriors last night, and I'll touch on a few other interesting storylines coming from the NBA playoffs, all right? So a loaded show. If you want to be a part of it, you know how you can do so. Pick up the phone and dial 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Go to Facebook.com/WKAR News, and you can comment below the new look live stream, and you can tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR News. Here are your quick hit headliners. Okay, just want to remind you all that the Michigan State men's soccer program will continue its spring campaign, taking on Lansing Ignite FC in an exhibition match tonight, 7 p.m., downtown Lansing at Cooley Law School Stadium. Michigan State coming off one of its most successful seasons in school history, reaching the NCAA College Cup for the first time in 50 years. The Spartans ended the season with a 14-5-4 record. And again, this is the inaugural year of Lansing Ignite, held its first home game of the season this past weekend. And this is kind of a cool event because it's kind of a play off of what the Lansing Lugnuts and the Michigan State baseball team does, the Crosstown Showdown that's been going on for years. So Ignite and the MSU men's soccer team. That should be a fun game tonight. But I must say, though, the weather is not that great. Looks as though it's going to rain throughout the evening. Okay, so if you're going downtown Lansing, please bring an umbrella. Okay, this news broke today. The supporters group for the Lansing Ignite soccer team had to revoke memberships from people who have displayed, quote, racist and otherwise distasteful social media activity. This report coming from the Lansing State Journal. The Assembly Line, that's the supporters group for Ignite, they released a news release from its board of directors and said the people who have been removed from the club made the social media post before they came, before they became members, excuse me. It added, the people do not represent, quote, our aims and to be inclusive and respectful towards all. Okay, Michigan State men's basketball redshirt senior forward Kenny Goins
was one of 64 seniors from across the country selected to play in the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament this week in Virginia. PIT will be held from Wednesday to Saturday at the Churchland High School Sports Complex out in Virginia. This is what Goins had to say concerning this honor. Quote, I never really saw myself in this situation 5 years ago. Hearing about it, it's impossible not to be excited. I'm ready for that next door to open. Michigan State is probably the only reason I'm going to be there. The prestige of this university and the help of my coaches, I'm sure they talked me up, and I wouldn't be there without them. So Goins, again, a redshirt senior from Michigan State, moved into the starting lineup in his final year on campus and was one of the most valuable players for the Spartans. So from walk-on to now this moment right here, awesome stuff. I really believe Kenny Goins has a pretty good shot at becoming a professional basketball player somewhere. If not in the NBA's G League, maybe overseas somewhere. That's awesome stuff for Kenny Goins. Also, the Detroit Tigers are in action today at home. The Tigers, sitting at 8-7, will take on the Pittsburgh Pirates. First pitch set for 6:40 p.m. Matthew Boyd will take the mound for the Tigers. Boyd is 1-1 with a 2.6 ERA. All right, the Detroit Pistons. Blake Griffin, he just wants to help out his team in the postseason. The Detroit Pistons medical staff won't allow him to do that just yet because he still might be in uniform during the opening round playoff series. They won't allow him to play. That's what's being reported right now. Following that embarrassing 121-86 loss over the weekend to the top-seeded Milwaukee Bucks in the NBA's Eastern Conference, the Pistons returned to Michigan and practiced yesterday afternoon. The all-star power forward in Blake to be on the court, but it's he wants to be on the court, but it's not his call. Griffin is dealing with a sore left knee. This is what Dwayne Casey had to say, head coach of the Pistons. Quote, he worked out today. He's lobbying. He wants to play. It's the medical staff. The doctors are the ones making those decisions. Not me, not Blake. So a Yahoo Sports report after Game 1 indicated that Griffin was unlikely to play in the series. Casey remains hopeful that Griffin can get back in the lineup. There's no structural damage to the knee, so that's good news. Nor does there seem to be a fear that he could do long-term damage by playing. It's more of a case of whether he can be effective and can play through the soreness. All right, and speaking of the NBA playoffs, what a night it was in the playoffs, folks. The Philadelphia 76ers responded after a night of controversy following Game 1. Now, as you all know, Joel Embiid, Amir Johnson, they were the heat of discussion because they were peeping on something on Johnson's phone. It looked like a text message thread or some sort. They dropped 145 points, the most in 76ers postseason history. Six players scored at least 15 points. And Tobias Harris, former Detroit Pistons, he had 19, and B with 23 points, 10 boards. Ben Simmons, triple-double, 18 points, 10 rebounds, 12 assists. J.J. Redick, 17 points. Mike Scott, 15. Boban Marjanovic, 16 points, also former Pistons player. Love Boban, by the way. The series now tied 1-1. Next game Thursday at 8 p.m. on TNT. So nice to see the Sixers rebound after that that effort against the Brooklyn Nets in Game 1. Also, D'Angelo Russell was playing some really good basketball. Really entertaining watching him play. Also, the nightcap, that's what everybody's really talking about, though. The Golden State Warriors had a 31-point lead at one point last night. But that was not enough to slow down the L.A. Clippers. They fought back, scoring 44 points in the third, 41 points in the fourth. Coming back to stun the Warriors. Lou Williams, he was brilliant. 36 points. Montrezl Harrell got the double-dub, 25 points, 10 rebounds. Danilo Gallinari, he notched 24 points. Despite getting 29 points, Steph Curry was 8 of 18 overall in field goals. And 5-11 from three, Kevin Durant, 9 turnovers, also fouled out at a key moment in that game last night. And now the series is tied, one game apiece. Next game, Thursday night, 10:30 p.m., following the 76ers and the Nets on TNT. All right, for an update on what happened on Monday night in the world of NHL playoff action, I go behind the glass to our very own Jack Kerwin. Jack, what happened last night?
Yes, sir. So four games in the NHL playoffs last night. The Maple Leafs returning home to no longer the Air Canada Center, but Toronto. They defeated the Bruins by a score of 3-2. They now have a 2-1 series lead in that first round series. The Hurricanes have cut the deficit from 2-0 to 2-1 against the Washington Capitals, shutting them out by a score of 5-0 yesterday. The Nashville Predators have taken a 2-1 series lead after dropping game one by taking game three on the road in Dallas over the Stars 3-2. And then probably the biggest storyline is the first place Flames, first place in the Pacific Division, have fallen behind 2-1 to the wildcard Colorado Avalanche after falling last night by a score of 6-2. The Avalanche finishing with 56 shots on goal in that game.
Awesome stuff. You know, I tuned into to SportsCenter last night after watching Inside the NBA, and Jack, there was a player, correct me if I'm wrong, who made like his NHL debut, who scored in a playoff game last night.
Yeah, that would be Cale Makar for Colorado.
I did see that. That's the first time it's happened like since like the early 2000s.
It was 2008, I believe it last was. Yeah, I can't remember who it was, but it was a fairly notable player. But yeah, first time in a while.
And I did see, to collide the worlds of the NBA and the NHL, Dirk Nowitzki was also in the house during the Dallas game, I believe, last night. So that's also pretty cool. Awesome stuff, though. I mean, to have your NHL debut and to go out there in the playoffs and score a goal.
It's big time.
That's big time, dude. That's big time. Okay. Also, President Donald Trump, he announced yesterday that he will award Tiger Woods the Presidential Medal of Freedom after his win on Sunday at the Masters, the golfer's first major since 2008. This is what Donald Trump had to say, I believe, on Twitter. Quote, spoke to Tiger Woods to congratulate him on the great victory he had in yesterday's Masters and to inform him that because of this incredible success and comeback in sports, and more importantly, life, I will be presenting him with the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Now, the Presidential Medal of Freedom is one of the nation's highest civilian awards.
Wrong.
It is bestowed upon those who have made, quote, especially meritorious contributions to the security or national interest of the United States to
Wrong.
Peace or to cultural or other significant public or private endeavors. It just
Wrong.
Surprises me. You know, I thought, Jack, that Tiger already had this. I mean, people like Al Pacino, Oprah Winfrey.
Tom Hanks, yeah.
I mean, the list goes. There's so many people who have gotten this. So I'm just surprised that Tiger is getting this now. I thought he already had it in the bag. So, but to win the Masters and get a Presidential Medal of Freedom. And this just goes to further elaborate on my point. This is the greatest comeback in sports history. There is, you can't think of any other equal to this moment. And it just goes to show how impactful that win was in the world of sports and just pop culture, man. Pretty unbelievable. So again, hold tight, because later on this hour we will have Casey Lubon on the show. I'm excited to pick Casey's brain on what it was like for him watching what Tiger Woods did on Sunday at the Masters. And it wasn't easy. You know, Tiger had to earn that. He had to earn that, baby. At one point, it was like five or six guys tied for the lead. Anybody could have won it, but Tiger, you know, he locked in, got focused, did not make any mistakes, and, you know, hit some pretty good shots on those final holes. So, more, again, on Tiger Woods' Masters victory with MSU men's golf coach Casey Lubon later on this hour. Let's keep it pushing.
wasn't surprised. I saw the replay, and obviously it wasn't intentional. And I got him pretty good, and I'm sorry about it. But... Okay. I'm sorry about it. It wasn't intentional, but it's just me trying to be aggressive. I'm not usually humble, that's why he's laughing. But I was just trying to be aggressive.
That was one of the many entertaining moments of last night's NBA playoffs. Joel Embiid sitting at the podium. Joel Embiid, center for the Philadelphia 76ers, sitting at the podium next to fellow star Ben Simmons after the 76ers were able to tie up the series against the Brooklyn Nets. There was a moment last night. It got a little chippy. Embiid unleashed a vicious full force elbow. It was like a Bruce Lee elbow to the face of Jared Allen's neck when trying to beat him in the paint. You know, and you've seen big men do this over time. It's a way to clear space, but you know, you can't do that in today's league. You know, you know that you're going to get a technical, maybe even a flagrant, possibly even thrown out, depending on how vicious it is. It was pretty bad last night. Embiid just turned around, swung that elbow, and Jared Allen went tumbling to the floor. So Embiid, with Simmons next to him, he apologized, but not really. And you heard him there in that snippet. He said, "I'm sorry." And then what happened was Ben Simmons begins to laugh. And then Embiid, he tried to put it together, and then he starts cracking up for like, you know, 7 to 10 seconds. And then contains himself. And Ben continues to laugh. And then Joel continues to laugh. And it's just like, dude, you know, if you don't really mean it, why even say it? You know what I mean? It's like, you know, that's what Charles and Kenny and Shaq. Well, Shaq, actually, he didn't have a problem with it. Charles Barkley had a huge problem with it. For me, it's kind of a catch-22 because you guys know I like stuff like this. You know, I like, you know, when there is a player who's a bit cocky, who talks some trash, and when there's kind of some hate or dislike when it comes to the opposition, I kind of like that kind of stuff because it's a throwback to the 80s and the 90s style of basketball. But I also see where Charles Barkley is coming from. You know, if you're going to apologize with the mic in front of your face, do it sincerely. You know, don't laugh about it. But hey, what do I know? Just one of the many, many entertaining moments from last night. Later on this hour, I'll comment on the comeback of the LA Clippers. It was the biggest comeback in NBA playoff history. Should the Warriors be worried? I'll answer that question, and I also have thoughts on my Detroit Pistons. Just not a great effort in game one. I admit I turned it off in the third quarter. I turned it off, could not watch any more of it, and I started getting ready for Game of Thrones that night, okay? I said, "Yep, that's it. I'm done with this. Let's get ready for Thrones." All right, I have thoughts on that later on this hour as well. But I want to touch on the spring game. I'm not going to harp on, like, this story became the story. It's like spring game, yay, but let's talk about these ugly jerseys. That's what everybody wanted to talk about. And, again, you heard my take on it. Not going to elaborate any further. I think people are just totally overreacting to it. They're alternative jerseys.
It's just so disrespectful you to say something like that.
Jack, they're alternative. Dude, they're going to wear it one time. Why are people acting like this is the end of the world? The only problem I have with it, too, you know, I don't think, and again, it's art. I made this point yesterday. Art, everybody interprets art differently. Okay, whether it's in music, whether it's looking at a painting, whether it's style, your style is different from my style. What you rock going out to the club on a Saturday night is different from what I would rock when going to the club on a Saturday night. Everybody has different style. Just look at celebrities. What, you know, what Jaden Smith wears
is different from, well, they're kind of in the same category, actually, like a Kanye West, okay? I mean, just looking at the variations of style in the world, when did everybody become like the second coming of Tommy Hilfiger? I mean, my goodness, critiquing a jersey that they're only going to wear once and everybody getting up in arms about it, I don't understand it. For me, it's about going out there and can you win games? Not what you're rocking. But, and when you look at the jersey, for me, is it, in my opinion, the greatest looking jersey? No. But to call it the ugliest jersey in the history of college sports, and this is the ugliest alternative jersey ever, just overreaction to me. The one big critique I have is the big state across the chest. That could have said Spartans or at least lower the font a little bit, but everybody tripping about this jersey. Just take a chill pill. It's not the end of the world. So, And we got a lot of comments on it on Facebook, at our Facebook page. Before I talk about the specifics of the spring game, the X's and O's of that, Jack, any thoughts on this jersey? I'll ask you, any thoughts that you have concerning this jersey that you want to get off your chest before I move forward? Go ahead.
Well, sure. I mean, these are the worst jerseys I've ever seen State wear. They're absolutely terrible. And they'd be better if they had black pants instead of the lime green pants. But they can take this whole idea of, you know, the state across the chest. I think it's what Oregon had on their jerseys a year or two ago.
What'd they have on the front of
their
jersey?
I think it said Ducks. I think they had something similar
cool.
to this.
At least say the mascot. Say Spartans.
Well, but either State. Way, my whole point is they can take this. I mean, I feel like we're trying to be Oregon here with these jerseys, and I'm just not a neon guy. I think it looks okay with our basketball jerseys, but these are just not for me at all. I think the helmet's okay.
The helmet's not bad. I like the neon green Spartan logo on the helmet. Again, the only big problem I got is just the state across the chest. Other than that, they're cool.
I think if they wore black pants too, it would be a lot more bearable than lime green.
They may pop with black pants more. But yeah, I don't know. I just think people are just overreacting to this. Just like chill out. I think that the uproar is so crazy now that maybe Nike will go back and make some modifications to it. And it was so funny watching. Don't know if you caught the broadcast on the Big Ten Network, but Joe Bocci, you know, he had an interview on the sideline with the sideline reporter, and they had a mannequin on the sideline wearing the jersey. And Joe is like, you could tell that Joe Bocci, he really didn't like the jersey, but you put him on the spot. He's on live television on the Big Ten Network. He's not going to bash the jersey. You kind of got a lot. You know, I always say this, you know, in certain situations, you have to die with the lie. He had to die with the lie, you know, on Saturday. And he's like, well, look at it. You know, hey, it's got neon. Look at the helmet. The helmet looks great. Look, the state across the chest looks sexy. You know, he's trying to sell you something that he doesn't really believe in, you know. So that was a funny moment for those that caught the broadcast. All right, when it comes to the actual game, what I'm going to do before I dive into a few bullet points that I have, hard takeaways, take that lightly, when it comes to the spring game on Saturday, I want to play to you audio of Coach Mark D'Antonio. This is a bit of what Coach D had to say after the spring game at the podium, starting with when he was asked a question about how do you judge the offense? And, you know, based on the fact that it is a spring game and you're going against a defense that is very, very stout, you know, again, if you just have an average offense to go along with that really, I believe, national championship caliber defense of last year's Michigan State football team, man, I think sky's the limit. But that didn't happen. Michigan State returning 9 on offense, 8 on defense. That's great. But, you know, how do you judge an offense where, you know, you're playing in a spring game, you don't want to show too much, and you're going against a very, very good defense? How do you judge it? And here's a bit of what Mark D'Antonio had to say about that and a lot more.
Well, let's hope so. First of all, you know, I hope they continue to play like that. But I don't know. You know, we play a lot of press coverage. We play a lot of quarters coverage and man coverage. So that's not a That's not earth-shattering. People know that about us. So the windows are going to be tight to throw the ball into. I thought Josiah Price made an outstanding play. Really made a couple of outstanding plays. So they got the ball off of people. And so, you know, when you're the head coach, you know, you're sort of in the wind, literally. The guy makes a good play and on defense, and or he makes a good play on offense, you know, you've got to just value that as a good football play. So that's what we'll do. But we'll watch the film. And the main thing I want to always try and do in these spring games is this an active game. We're not tagging off there. We're not, you know, at the end of the game, we put our ones in the game a little bit. Dante Rizzano broke his arm, so he's out right now. But that's the only real injury I think that we had that was significant. So I think he'll be okay. But I think the main thing you want to do is try and, again, be crisp as we can. Everybody gets an opportunity, and that you take steps forward, and that there's value in this scrimmage. And I think there is value in it because we can evaluate and say, hey, could you block this guy, or can you tackle that guy?
Mark, I want to ask you about Brian a little more specifically. To me, it looked like he was back to throwing the way we were used to seeing him throw, mm-hmm. with a little zip. You know, kind of right on the money. Yeah. Did you see that from him? Was that one of the most important things to see today from him?
Yeah, I think so. You know, especially like I said, I mean, the wind is blowing out there. I don't know which way it's blowing. That's the crazy thing. You know, it's blowing across the field, back, forth, everything. So it was all over the place. So I thought he threw the ball effectively, as I said. I think he's done that throughout the spring. His arm strength is good. Doesn't mean it's going to be on the money all the time, but his arm strength is good. He looks healthy. And I think I hope his confidence is there. You know, that's what I plan on. It seems to be, based on how he performed today. But, you know, quarterback is such an inspiring position. You know, you need to inspire people. It's not just you got to have confidence in yourself. I don't care either the one, two, three, or four. And you got to inspire other people. And your body language has to say so. So I think you'll be ready to go.
Mark, you, kind of along the same lines, Brian this week had said he thought that it's still kind of a work in progress as far as he felt fine, but just getting back, how much do you think today goes towards pushing him down that road a little further?
Well, when you throw the ball well and you're connecting on receivers and making some plays, I think that's great for you. You know, that's always a practice-to-practice thing. Again, you go back to how good we are on the other side of the ball, and it's not just the quarterback all the time. You got to separate on offense with your receivers. So you got to protect the quarterback. So there's a lot of things working. And as I said to our players today, you know, I mean, really, if you could talk to an offensive lineman and a defensive back, you wouldn't even know that they're playing the same game based on what they're being taught and how complex the offensive line play is compared to how to play a corner. It's two different, very different type positions. So it all goes hand in hand. It really does. So I've continually said in here, football is a game of execution, and you got to pass protect. You got to have a rhythm throwing the ball. You got to throw it to the right place. Same with running the ball. You got to defend it. You got to have a pass rush, those type of things. So it all goes hand in hand. But I think, again, I go back to the totality of the scrimmage. I think it's a positive. They have to play in front of people. There's crowd noise out there. You couldn't hear out there. So there was enough crowd noise to create that and play in front of people, which I think is a positive. For a lot of guys who've never, you know, we've got young guys who've not played very much, too. So that was a good experience for them.
Mark, a lot of running backs got touches today. Can you comment on what you saw and evaluate that position at the end of spring?
Well, I think one of the things that we want to look at is who we're going to hand the ball to 200 times. Who is that person? And I keep asking that question as I go. And you see some spurts of different guys accordingly. You know, I think 34 out there gives you a guy. I mean, he's reminds me a little of Jeremy Langford. I thought Connor Hayward hit a big one on the screen. No question he can catch the football. I think that Elijah Collins has done some things, but he's a little hesitant at times, and he's got to hit it. And I think Ladarius is a big, big, powerful back. Weston got in there some, too. So, again, I think that's a work in progress, to be quite honest with you. But they've had good moments, all of them, and we've run the ball more effectively this spring.
Mark, over here. Back to the running backs with Anthony Williams. What is it you like about him? I mean, he obviously looks the part, seems to have some natural instincts. What about him early on gives him a chance?
You know, he's quick. He's got a good first step and good cutback ability, and I think he's got good vision. He catches the ball well. He's tough, and he's just learning the position, so he's not topped out. You know, I mean, he's just starting to, you know, he's had 14 practices, so he's still learning. But I think he has really all spring. He's shown things in the spring that reminds you of, like I said, Jeremy a little bit in terms of just sort of that ability to cut back against the grain.
Mark, I was wondering, A.J. Arcuri is a guy that we've heard about a little bit this spring in terms of possibly making a move. I know you said you'd have to watch the film to get a little deeper. I was just curious to your top-line sort of thoughts on his play and the offensive line in general today.
You know, again, I'm just trying to keep my footing out there, not getting blown away. So it's tough, really, to evaluate your offensive line, you know, in there. I don't think, you know, we didn't bring max pressure and things of that nature on defense, but I thought he did pretty well. But, you know, again, you got to watch the film on that one.
In this format, third straight year, how have you evaluated the way you put, like, starters, mostly starters versus starters, and kind of setting up those situations where you want to create those?
Yeah, you know, in these scrimmages, I'm always going to create three red zone opportunities or sudden change opportunities for the offense to make the defense play with their back to the ball, to the wall, and in the red zone. I think that's important that they do that they have to be able to roll up and play. Consequently, you have to be able to take advantage of the red zone when you have that opportunity. You know, so we're trying to make it like that. I don't want the ball being punted back and forth the whole scrimmage. So there's sort of six plays and on, you know, so we're going to play six straight plays and on. And so there's sort of we've done that. We could split it up and have a scrimmage, but then you can't put guys, you just can't alternate guys in and play around with the different scenarios. In other words, play twos with ones. So we tried to mix it up in there to give everybody an opportunity to play, which I think that's as much as important as anything. Let them show what they've got, continually show on film. As I said earlier in the week, I think we've got, you know, I think we ran 90-plus plays out there, which is a lot for a spring game in two-thirds of a game. So they're getting work, and they're getting an opportunity to do what they can do, and then we can have an opportunity to evaluate.
So, again, a bit of what Mark D'Antonio had to say after Saturday's spring game at Spartan Stadium. A decent crowd, not, you know, not crazy. If I had to guess, you know, looking at, you know, just an estimation of what I saw in the stands, probably about, I don't know, 5,000 to 7,000, something like that.
Right on. I think D'Antonio said 6,000.
That's what he said. Yeah. Okay, yeah. That's just me just guessing, right? You know, decent day, you know, didn't have any rain or anything like that. You know, it was a little cool, but, you know, clear sky, sunny, and, you know, just an awesome time for you to just wet your beak a little bit when it comes to anticipating the 2019 Michigan State football year. A few takeaways. Brian Lewerke, that's the big storyline, right? How did Brian Lewerke look? Did you see any zip on the ball, his accuracy, so on and so forth? I thought Brian looked good, you know, from what we saw on Saturday. His throws were tight. He did have some heat on him. And 14 of 20, 181 yards. He threw for two touchdowns. And the one interception that he had was just, in my opinion, just a great play by Josiah Scott. You know, you don't want to throw his way. Josiah Scott is going to be in the NFL after next season. You can pretty much take that one to the bank. I really love Josiah Scott. Just a great play by Josiah Scott. But the thing for me was Brian Lewerke looked comfortable. His arm looked healthy. And that's the big thing. You know, last season, there were many that criticized him. I did here on Current Sports, but I also gave that criticism in addition to the fact that I just thought he should have sat out. I thought that, and knowing that Brian Lewerke was not 100%, why was Brian Lewerke continually out there on the gridiron? Just didn't understand that. He needed time to heal. Looks as though he's healthy now, so now we can give a fair evaluation based on what we see come next season. You know, when it comes to the Michigan State defense, you know, I'm impressed with this defense and the fact that, you know, this defense returns so many, you know, eight returning starters for the Michigan State defense, a defense that was ranked as one of the best in college football last season. I'm encouraged about this defense. Okay. I will say this, you know, the 2018 Defensive Lineman of the Year, Kenny Willekes, is out for the spring. Still recovering from that broken leg. Brad Salem, that was also another big storyline in the offseason, right? Brad Salem, promoted from QB coach to now the offensive coordinator. I'm wondering, with all of the offensive woes that we saw last season, I'm wondering just how willing Coach D'Antonio is when it comes to just letting Brad do his thing. Or does D'Antonio have like a heightened sense now because of how bad that offense was last season? Will he be more hands-on when it comes to the offense? I think that D'Antonio just has to let Brad do his thing, trust that Brad Salem is going to do a better job than what we saw last season, and go from there. But and then when it comes to a spring game, you don't want to show everything because it's a spring game. You saw what the University of Michigan, I touched on this yesterday, you saw what the University of Michigan did with its spring game this past weekend. No cameras in the house. The Big Ten Network didn't broadcast it. It was more like, it wasn't even a scrimmage. It was more just like a practice. The fans could come out and enjoy it. Jim Harbaugh not showing much because you don't want to show much before the season begins. So it's not like, you know, when looking at the spring game on Saturday, Mark D'Antonio wasn't pulling out all the stops and running all these different plays that you'll see to give the competition some insight into how this team will operate come next season.
You're talking about the jet sweeps to the weak side of the field and the Wildcats up the middle for 3 yards?
Let's hope we don't see those, Jack.
Please. We'll see both of them.
I hope that we do not see those come next season. I'm just curious. You know, it's like, you know, looking at how bad this offense was last season, it's not like it takes a rocket scientist to kind of figure out how to get this offense humming, or at least how to get this offense back on some kind of track as opposed to last year.
Like run a mesh concept or run a counter or use the middle of the field passing the football.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I hope we don't see those. But I wouldn't be surprised if we do, because it's Mark
I want to see those things. I just don't want to see the jet sweep and the Wildcats. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Exactly. But, yeah, the concepts you just brought up, yeah, I would love to see those. We'll see, though. But I'm encouraged a little bit based on what I saw from Brian Lewerke. He has to stay healthy. I'm concerned about the running back position. I don't know. It's going to be running back by committee. There's a few guys vying for that position now. When it comes to the wide receiver position, Daryl Stewart's going to be that guy. Again, you do lose Felton Davis. I just got a lot of question marks when it comes to the offense, as we should have those question marks, right? Not too much concerned about the defense. As we lead you into this this first break, I do want to play to you a soundbite from Connor Hayward, one of the running backs vying for a lot of time come next season for this team in the backfield. This is what... Connor Hayward had to say concerning the jerseys.
Honestly, you know, it's new, but it's different, you know. With today's age, you know, recruiting all that, it draws the kids' attention. They like all the flashy stuff. I'm not too flashy, I don't think, but, you know, there's different variations you can wear them with. I was talking to one of our EQ guys, well, our head EQ guy, and he basically just told me that we're not always, like, we'll probably wear it, you know, the first game or later on in the year, but... we'll wear it with green pants too. Not the neon stuff, because the other stuff goes with different stuff. So I don't know. I know we have an older fan base, so I don't know how they feel about it. But I don't know. I think we're all excited about it. Some of the linemen, they were like, I don't think those neon pants look good on me. But, you know, us skill guys, we love everything.
So they agree with you, Jack. They don't like the neon pants. They feel like they're going to switch up the pants at least. And Connor kind of taking a shot at the Michigan State fan base as a whole, saying that we have an older fan base. We have a lot of, basically, this is what I read between the lines when hearing Connor just then. You know, we've got a lot of old fans out there that probably are not digging these jerseys.
I'm 20 years old, and I think those jerseys suck. The ones we wore against Oregon a couple of years ago were awesome.
Which one were those?
It would have been my senior year in high school. They were like green and black and gray, if I recall. No, green and black, I just think.
Okay. I vaguely remember.
Yeah, it would have been 2015, the playoff year, though. I mean, okay. No, I love alternate jerseys generally. I'm just not a fan of these.
Yeah. Connor wants to, you know, if they do wear them, they will wear them. But, you know, there'll be some modifications. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll talk with Casey Lubon, head coach of the Michigan State men's golf team. He'll weigh in on the greatness that we saw on Sunday. Tiger Woods winning his fifth green jacket, his first major in a long, long time. That and more. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports.
All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Excited for today's guest as we will further dive into Tiger Woods winning his fifth green jacket, his first major championship since 2008. And, you know, I didn't know this story. I saw this actually late last night when just I'm still riding high off of this Tiger Woods victory. When it came to what he did on Sunday, he's going toe-to-toe with Francesco Molinari, with a crowded group of near leaders behind him as well. And earlier on in the day, you know, it almost came apart after making par on his first two holes and a birdie on the third. Woods, he picked up two straight bogeys on 4 and 5, dropping him three behind Molinari. Now, according to ESPN's Ian O'Connor, after the second bogey, Woods' caddy, Joe LaCava, he cursed at Tiger for some sloppy play. Then Woods retreated into a bathroom and privately cursed himself out. So, according to O'Connor, Woods went back to the course. He reflected on LaCava's advice, and he went out there and won a green jacket. But that's an interesting story because I didn't see that surface until, again, like late last night. I'm doing some reading, and then Business Insider actually published that. But Ian O'Connor, again, reporting that Woods' caddy cursed him out. Well, cursed at him, I should say. He didn't curse him out. He cursed at Tiger. And then Tiger went into a bathroom, cursed himself out, and then went out and then won a green jacket. That's awesome stuff. The legend continues. All right, right now we welcome another legend to our show. He's one of my favorite guests, Casey Lubon, who is the head coach of the Michigan State men's golf program. Casey, welcome to Current Sports. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I want to start here, Casey. Where were you and what was your reaction when you watched Tiger do what he did at the Masters in Augusta on Sunday?
Well, I was in Detroit and I was planning to come back about lunchtime Sunday morning. And I got my two little girls out of bed and I said, we're going home so I could watch every minute from my living room. I'll tell you, there's many times where we'll camp out and watch a Sunday at the Masters. We'll look forward to that all year. But there's never been a Sunday at the Masters where I've been weeping at the end of it and making a 6-year-old girl and 8-year-old girl watch it with me, because this is something they'll remember, I hope. A transformational figure who became human through his mistakes and through some injuries, and then he overcame it all. Very, very impressive.
And I can't lie either, Casey. I told this story yesterday. I found myself getting a bit emotional as well when he hit when he knocked in that putt to win the green jacket, and you see him throw his arms up and he hugs his son Charlie and his daughter, and you know, his mom's there, and they had that flashback to 97 when he won his first and he hugs his father. And then, like you said, you hit it right on the head. We can relate to Tiger so much because he's human, and he he's a guy who fell from the mountaintop and now has climbed himself out of that. Why do you think so many of us, are so amazed by Tiger Woods and captivated by this man?
Well, I think in the golf industry, it was real simple. No one had ever played our sport like this. But I think being a minority piece and making the game attractive to non-golfers was his first, kind of foray into the game. But now as he's gotten older, this real version of him that's starting to come out. If you knew tour life, you knew he was always a jokester and the guys liked him and he was a lot of fun to be around, maybe immature early in his life. Well, now he's maturing as a father and as a man. And hopefully he's understanding what he did from 1999 to 2008 was unheard of, because it's a lot harder than he made it look for those years. So I still struggle with the connection, because it's not just my guys or every avid golfer. It was a lot of people who were emotional Sunday. And maybe it's because you're never going to see this again.
Right, right. That's so true. And, Casey, we had you on Current Sports last summer, and I asked you whether or not you thought that Tiger would win another tournament, let alone another major, and you took a pause and said, yeah, I think he will. He's playing golf really well lately and he's trending upward. What made you so confident that Tiger would get to this point or somewhere close to this point?
Probably because it's not a mechanical thing, right? It's not a swing fix. It's not. It's something that lives inside of you that you know how to handle that moment. I was watching with such tension in my body watching, and I'm trying to figure out how in the world is he even operating. Like, I can't sit down. I'm running around texting everybody, you know, talking about it, thinking about the emotions I'm having versus the emotions he must be having. Well, obviously, he's very good at managing that. And once he hit the shot on 12, and the discipline and the patience was really there, you know, then it just looked like what he had always done. So when that's in you, it doesn't go away. Sometimes it's just really hard to discover again.
12 was so key because that's when a very solid player in Francisco Molinari began to, you know, fall apart a bit. And he had looked so solid. I believe, you know, they brought up a stat, something like 49 straight holes without a bogey. And you know, that focus for Francisco just kind of went down the drain. That was the key hole for me, Casey, when it became real for me that Tiger could pull this thing off. When did it become real for you watching that round?
Well, certainly that helped, but because Francesco only hit one of the first seven greens in regulation, I think you know, unless the cat's only got nine lives, well, a professional golfer who has to get up and down at Augusta on Sunday way too many times is eventually going to get burned. So early on in the round, like he made a silly up and in on six that he shouldn't have, you know, and he still hadn't hardly hit a green. I thought the biggest turning point outside of number 12 was on 7. Tiger makes a couple of bogeys, stuffs it in there, and Francesco finally cracks. Like, he finally can't get up and down for the fourth hole in a row, and the two-shot swing happened. At that point, no matter what Molinari's thinking, he knows this is going to go the rest of the day. There wasn't going to be a fade like we saw at Carnoustie last summer. Tiger bogeyed 10-11 and then faded. He knew Tiger was going to be there till the end. Now the mindset changes. And eventually one of those mistakes finally caught him.
All right, he's at 15 now. Three away from Jack. Jack actually took some time to congratulate Tiger, and he said, quote, "I'm shaking in my boots now." Do you think Tiger can pass Jack now?
I do. I think he's got to get two in the next 2 years, though. I think he's got to find a way. Now, you think about, if you go back to the Open Championship and the PGA, that's three majors in a row. He's been basically right there. He's got to get one by the end of next year, at least, maybe probably two. Mm-hmm. And then he will do it. I mean, the setups are too good. You know, the putter looks fine. And greatness just keeps finding a way to reinvent itself. I was telling somebody yesterday, he changed his swing all those times when he was young, when he didn't have to. He just kept changing his swing because he wanted to be a little bit better. Well, think about how advantageous that was now when he had to change his swing because it was forced upon him. He knew how to do it. Mm-hmm. Greatness keeps reinventing himself, and I think he's got 30 majors left to play in. I think he can win four of those.
Definitely. If I was a betting man, I would go that route. Okay.
Yeah, you lose a lot of money betting on Tiger Woods. Against Tiger Woods.
Right. For sure, Casey. And I'm curious, you know, when you had that moment with your little ones watching those final moments on Sunday, I'm curious what their reaction was to that, because I feel like now with Tiger, you know, climbing back into our hearts and winning another major, the first time since 2008, there's a new generation that, again, didn't live through what the dominance of the late 90s and the early 2000s, who are rediscovering Tiger, or discovering Tiger, I should say, for the first time. What was the reaction from your little ones watching that?
Yeah, it was funny because obviously we don't see their father cry a whole lot, even though I'm more emotional than maybe a lot of people. But, you know, when I made them sit there, there was this frustration. They wanted to go do what they wanted to do, and then they see me crying. Then the question started, like, you know, why is this so emotional? Transformational figures don't come along that often. I don't care if you see him at 5 or you see him at 50. You'll be able to say you got to see them, right? And that's all I wanted them to know, that this was important. This is a person who was impactful in my life. And then when he hugged Charlie, you know, this is just a father, you know, just like any of us. They got it. And I wouldn't say they're celebrating like I am, but the one way I put it for them, and I might be overstating this, I said, you know, sweethearts, this is the most famous person in the world.
Yeah.
He just happens to be a golfer this time.
That's a
and
very
in the corner
good...
of the globe, yeah. He's probably, if he's not the most famous, he's one of the three most famous people in the world. He just happens to be a golfer. When are we going to see that again?
Right. Right. That's so true. That's a good way of putting it. And with 2 minutes left here, Casey, the impact of Tiger Woods on the game of golf is without a doubt very profound. You know, I stated the ratings at the beginning of this show, more than 20% of all televisions on in America on Sunday morning and into the afternoon were on CBS watching Tiger's final round. What kind of ripple effect do you think this now makes on the game of golf's popularity?
Well, we needed a boost, right? Our industry has gone right along Tiger's track. When Tiger was big, we built golf courses. We sold golf clubs. We had young kids joining the game, the first tee, and all these programs. When Tiger went away for a while, the game died right with him. Now, there was obviously some economic impact with the recession of 2008, but I love the line, you know, he doesn't move the meter. He is the meter.
Yeah.
And the reason why you know it's big and it's going to have an impact is the other guys are excited that he won. They're all saying, hey, if I didn't win, I want him to win. Because
right.
They know that race is all their boats, right? You know, when he first won the Masters, he made $486,000. Yesterday, he got $2.07 million Monday or Sunday. That's because of him.
So true. Casey, thank you so much. Very well put, my man. Thanks for sharing some time and opening up about what that moment was like for you on Sunday watching Tiger win that green jacket. Thank you so much, Casey.
Thank you, my friend. Talk to you soon.
You got it. All right, that's awesome. I tell you, man, only Tiger Woods has that kind of effect. You know, I know my stepdad up there in tears as well. I didn't shed any tears, but I had the lump in my throat. I was about to watching Tiger hug Charlie and celebrate that Masters win. There's only one athlete that can do that. The only other athlete, like I stated, is Michael Jordan. Only those two in my lifetime have I seen have an impact like that on sports. All right, folks, we'll see you on Wednesday. As always, take care and be easy, people.